Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Krissa McFarland, CEO of Patientory. Welcome, Krissa.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
So it's great to have you on. And another part of the honor is that you're another in the series of my co-members of the HIMSS Digital Influencer Program joining. So it's been great to be able to get all the different perspectives. And kind of, Krissa, before we get into the main part of our conversation, what I always like to do is let my guests provide a little bit more of their background in terms of who you are and what you do. So the floor is yours.
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. I am Krissa McFarland. I'm the founder and CEO of Patientory. We're a digital healthcare company based in Atlanta, Georgia. We're focused on empowering end users with secure access to their health data to achieve actionable insights to improve overall health and well-being.
So before we start getting into blockchain, I'm very interested. What got you into the healthcare industry?
I mean, I was always a part, you know, as a young girl growing up, I was more or less interested and excelled in science and mathematics. I went to a science and mathematics high school in New York City, where I was actually introduced to the medical field through my research at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, thinking that I would go into healthcare, you know, become a doctor. But I always had this passion about, you know, the business of healthcare and really impacting in lives on a large scale. My family background, they're entrepreneurs, you know, immigrated here from the Caribbean and had restaurants. So in a sense, I decided to combine, you know, my background and my interests in science and healthcare and entrepreneurship, which led me, you know, throughout the years, eventually from consulting to working with other startups to start Patientory.
So how did your background, your reference to your family history of owning restaurants, how did that inform your approach to starting your own company?
It helped, you know, it definitely gave me perspective in, you know, being mentally prepared to start a business, which I think most people don't realize it's definitely not, you know, the easiest time, you know, those first 3 to 4 years, especially in an industry that is nascent and at the time did not exist. So, you know, we've been through the process. But I think having that background and just, you know, seeing my parents be entrepreneurs really helped me with that initiative in the beginning.
So kind of the other question I have about, you know, how you got started is, I think you mentioned that the research you're doing in high school is what opened the door for you to start getting more experience in healthcare. So what were you researching?
I was actually researching. I had an independent project that was overseen by a principal investigator who was a PhD and chair for the microbiology department at Albert Einstein. And I was basically researching Legionnaire's disease and the bacteria that caused it, Legionella pneumophila, on basically how to decrease its uptake into white blood cells. Pretty dense for high school, huh?
No, that is really impressive and very interesting. So it sounds like you were very deep into the research science there. So what inspired you to move more, to, you know, kind of get outside the lab and be interact and focus on the direct interaction with individuals?
Yeah, I think it was because I found myself, you know, wanting to interact with individuals rather than pathogens, right? I went to business school and fell in love with the healthcare industry from that standpoint and never looked back.
No, I think that's a pretty fair point. I remember my wife, who is a physician, wanted to initially do bench science and then did a couple summers of it and realized that she wanted, kind of as you said, that interaction with people and seeing more of the direct impact that can be made.
Exactly. You don't think about that when you realize it, but it's like, yeah, I think, you know, I my personality is best suited for more interaction.
So with that desire for interaction, what ended up leading you down the path towards where you are now with Patient Tori and, you know, focusing on, you know, individual, I think, access and control?
Yeah. So, I mean, I went to business school focused in healthcare administration, consulted, you know, right during and right after that for, you know, mid-tier pharma companies based in North Carolina. And miraculously, it was actually poached by an alumna of my university. I went to Cornell, who had just raised a Series A for their telemedicine company in New York. And, you know, my work with that telemedicine company really opened the door to a lot of the healthcare problems and challenges we face, not only in this country, but globally, which really, you know, had me deep in research. As you can tell, I'm a researcher at heart, from the technology level. And that's where, you know, I came across blockchain, which more or less can help resolve a lot of the interoperability struggles that we currently have.
So given, as you said, I suspect that you've, since you're not only building a solution off of blockchain, but, you know, as you were saying, have that passion for research, can you provide a little bit more detail in terms of, you know, how a blockchain actually operates? Because I suspect that there is a lot of, you know, very high level glossy press around blockchain that doesn't actually do very much good in terms of getting people to understand what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then we have the whole crypto craze as well with the cryptocurrencies, which also deters people and also can confuse people into actually what blockchain is. But it is that underlying ledger, right, that Bitcoin and a lot of the other cryptocurrencies run off on. But when we really look at blockchain, it's a function, a distributed ledger that lends itself to traceability and trust across different industries. In healthcare, and how Patient Tori uses blockchain is more focused on the traceability and access to medical record data. We use it in conjunction with our decentralized storage system for health data record keeping.
So are there particular challenges that healthcare presents when it comes to utilizing and implementing a technology based on blockchain?
I would say there aren't any challenges to implement it. I think the challenges are, okay, when to implement it and why not to implement it, right? And we currently, right now, there's a big gap between, you know, the education in the industry on blockchain and then incentivization. So I think that one of the biggest challenges right now is the incentivization to actually adopt the technology, which we have a paper that's coming out on that, you know, incentivization. And we see social determinants of health as one of those key factors that would help to incentivize the industry to start to adopt this emerging technology. But also, if we look at regulations that are current and that are, you know, being passed, we have the 21st Century Cures Act, you know, which basically prohibits data blocking, especially amongst the electronic medical records. So now we can start to see much more of a push, you know, from patients, from the regulatory standpoint, for better practices, which can lend to blockchain implementation.
So with that push, what would a broader-based implementation look like?
In an ideal world, I'm going to say that because, you know, we had the same thing happen with, you know, electronic medical records implementation, where, you know, it was to provide better access, you know, for patients, but it ended up creating these walled siloed gardens. In the case of a blockchain system, the ideal implementation would be to connect these different siloed electronic medical record or storage systems of private health information data together, particularly to start to create a longitudinal record of individuals, but also, you know, to aid the industry on the whole. So from there, we can see new business models emerge, you know, whether that's between pharma companies and insurance companies or between pharma companies and hospital systems. The fact that there's a common network that they can all go to for data transfer and storage, I think that would be one of the biggest advancements in healthcare.
And when you say common network, what does that mean?
So common network of data access and storage. So if you think of it as a highway, you know, there's your interstate, which, you know, which can serve as that blockchain enhanced network where you have the sharing and the transmission of healthcare information.
So, and does that mean, you know, people are on the same type of blockchain, or is it that any solution that's working from a blockchain structure can interconnect?
Yeah, and I think it's both, right? So whether or not they're on the same blockchain, I would say network, or whether or not that blockchain network has the capability and the ability to interoperate with other networks.
So kind of, Krista, based on the description that you've been providing, is it fair to say that the opportunity presented by the blockchain solutions is that you can have a wide variety of tools that are all coming, it can all come together in a different way, but at the kind of on an underlying basis have some common set of standards and expectations?
Yeah, I think, you know, what it boils down to, you know, is the inherent management of what we now know as big data.
Yes, and I think anything that can help with management of big data will definitely be appreciated, since kind of the only thing you keep hearing is that the flood of it just keeps getting wider and deeper.
Yeah, and it's also the utility of it, you know, whether that's garbage in, garbage out, and really being able to decipher between what's useful and what's not useful.
So, and actually, that's an interesting point. So do you have any thoughts in terms of how to make that kind of filtering?
Yeah, I think a big part of that is really, you know, having structure, best practices and standardization protocols in place, and whether or not, you know, the ability to use AI to differentiate, you know, types of data information is really going to, you know, set and create value for the industry on a whole.
Yes, and for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Chris McFarland from Patientory, and we've been talking a lot about blockchain. And kind of, Chris, I'd like to go back to one of the earlier points you made, which is, you know, one of the reasons for the solution that you've developed, which is to help enable control and access of data by individuals. So could you walk us through a little bit in terms of how that control and access operates?
Absolutely. So our network, our distributed, decentralized blockchain network, is actually governed by its members through a consensus mechanism. You know, you have masternodes that run on the network who are also the consortia chiefs of the network. So they are able to govern who joins the network and help in voting on standards as to how the network is run periodically and geographically. So by putting the power into the hands of actual, you know, entities that are provided, you know, their data to this network, you know, we definitely are also creating more of a collaboration and incentivization model for this to happen. Then whereas, you know, as a business, we partake in this network by providing integration as well as analytics and support, you know, that would help render their businesses useful. But we also focus now on the patients, right? And helping them to navigate what their health information needs.
So is it fair to say that it's kind of two different approaches? So, you know, the patient is able to gather their own individual data, but at the same time, it sounds like a business might be maintaining the data as well and being able to utilize it?
Correct.
Right, yeah, because that actually goes into a question I was going to have, and maybe this is something that influences future debate, but, you know, if we're shifting control over the access to the individual, what happens to businesses that have some other obligation to maintain the data or need the data to be able to help the individual but aren't being given access?
Yeah, I mean, inherently, the hospitals already have access to their patients' information in order to provide treatment, right?
Yeah, no, one would hope so, at least.
Yeah.
Arguably, that's one of the problems with not having good interoperability at the moment, right?
Yeah, so I would say if going in to a new patient who's going into a hospital that they've never seen before would have to grant access to that care provider. And then we look at it also in emergency situations where, there are custodians on behalf of the patient who can also provide access to information in emergency services.
No, I think that's fair enough. And I think it's, I think that seems to recognize that, there's different circumstances that trigger different needs to be able to get at data and considering different sources for being able to provide that access, because the individual might not always be capable of doing that for themselves.
Exactly.
So I'm kind of interested. It's, this is arguably going a little bit to a side discussion, but, this seems to all end up going into a ownership versus access / control type of discussion. And it's one that I see fairly frequently. It seems to percolate up to some degree every few months. So, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts in terms of how you see distinctions among those different ideas and where you think the future might take us.
Absolutely. I mean, by creating this, I would say ecosystem, we're definitely improving an increase in access, which I think is one of our biggest challenges right now in regards to interoperability. As we mature on this process, we can start to look into ownership as well as, custodian of that data, which is going to be much more of a legal debate as we see it now. Individuals currently do not own their data, but if we can empower them with actually, being custodians of that data, whatever corresponds, with blockchain, we use, public-private key pair encryption. So if that data resides with that public-private key pair, I would say that's a fair argument for the actual ownership of the information.
And do you think it's possible that, the considerations could move beyond ownership? Because I heard you use the word custodianship, which, really seems to be, as at least from my perspective, a slightly different concept and one where it kind of encourages more of the collaboration and the coordination among different interested parties.
With that, right now, I would say your doctor is a custodian, while the actual practice may be the owner of the data. And right now, they try to do that collaboration. Let's say you're a chronic patient and, have multiple care providers. But today, I think we can all say that's not done efficiently. And we're still working on better ways of doing that. But I do think, when we look at custodianship, at the heart of that is this notion of collaboration that's needed to really, improve care, both at the individual level, but also, collectively on the industry level. And I think we are not there yet.
No, I think that's definitely very true. And I guess, do you see positive signs that it's getting closer to a reality of having, really well-established or actual collaboration coordination?
No, I think we're definitely at the start. We're at the beginning. It's interesting to see, even when we look at tech companies and the big five, GAFA, who are all jumping into healthcare. Everyone sees this as a burgeoning problem, especially when our GDP and our economy, spends so much on healthcare and it's a rise in cost. So I think, the conversations are being started and it's really now, a point where we can start to see emerging technologies, take shape and also contribute to these solutions.
No, and I think that's a good point that, as you said, so many see opportunities within healthcare. And you know, you're definitely right that you know all these technology, you know, non-healthcare technology companies are trying to come in. But that brings me to a point that you kind of alluded to at the start of the conversation, which is you know trying to maintain security and privacy around healthcare data. So, you know, how does this viewing healthcare as a industry for opportunity impact the ability to maintain privacy around individual healthcare data?
So I definitely think the topic of privacy and security is the foundation for this to happen, right? For this collaboration to happen. And I think that's why it hasn't happened yet. When we look at, you know, I get emails from Beckers or just to watch the news, you know, almost every week there's a ransomware or malware attack on a health system for you know, data and the breaches that occur. So I think until we can really say that the industry is about 95% confident in securing health information, we can't really move that conversation of collaboration forward. And really tackling security and privacy first is that building block to, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, new business models, you know, new forms of collaboration within the industry.
So what changes do you see as being required to help advance that privacy discussion? Because it seems like we've had a start, but there is a lot of discussion nowadays about having a much broader regulatory or legal scheme around privacy, because it feels very segmented, at least in the United States.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, this conversation has already happened in other industries. And I believe our equivalent right now is HIPAA, which, you know, has been around for, you know, the past over 20 years. So in regarding privacy within the healthcare realm, I think it's the issue of looking at basically new ways of data sharing that have existed to date. And how it falls in line with HIPAA, but also looking at, you know, really putting the patients first to look at how this is affecting, you know, our access as consumers in the realm of HIPAA and whether or not, you know, certain policies need to be updated. But seeing, looking at GDPR right now, I think that's already occurred in Europe. I think that may be a good start for healthcare.
So are there particular aspects or I guess maybe not aspects, but are there particular privacy concepts that you think should be considered within that discussion?
The biggest one is, you know, that we take away and that because we've done a whole GDPR HIPAA compliance on our blockchain network. And the biggest one is right, the right to be forgotten and the right to remove your information. Right now, I don't think that entirely exists with our current framework on how, especially electronic medical records store information. But then again, you know, going back to what I alluded to, maybe that's something that needs to start to, you know, come to the surface as we progress and look at new terms or just new methodologies for privacy and security of health information.
No, I think that's a very fair point. It's, you know, I definitely think there is a law that should be considered from the perspective of, you know, how do we currently perceive privacy and security and how should we allow or not allow, but how should, you know, policy evolve to reflect, you know, and be able to grow with the world around us.
Exactly.
So, Krista, believe it or not, we're already almost at the end of our time. So I would like to kind of let you leave us with one final thought and hopefully be able to base it off of a question around, you know, what has you most encouraged and feeling most positive about healthcare right now?
I mean, for us, it's the individual, right? Really put in the patient back at the center of care. I'm really excited about that right now. The whole, you know, Be the Change initiative that is now promoted by him. And just looking at how, you know, enterprises, different healthcare institutions are focused on that patient narrative, whether that's through patient engagement initiatives, you know, non-healthcare companies, tech companies, empowering patients with different services. So I'm really excited as to where the industry is headed.
No, I think that's a great way to kind of close out. As you said, the focus in the promotion of the individual. I agree. There's going to be a lot of change to be following. But kind of, as I already said, believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Chris McFarland, for a great conversation today.
Thank you again for having me.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.